This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. When you get older, you become more vulnerable. You rely on family and friends to help with little things like a trip to the grocery store or even bigger needs like doctor's appointments or even a place to live. But often the people who are seen as the helpers can also be abusers. Last year, there were more than 14,000 reported cases of elder abuse and exploitation in Ohio. We're going to talk today about the problem. Joining me are CEO and President of Cedar Village and the Shalom Center for Elder Abuse Prevention at Cedar Village, Carol Silver Elliott. From the UC College of Nursing, we have Dr. Evelyn Fitzwater and the President of CareMinistry.com, Charles Pukta. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Certainly happy to have you all here today. I'd like to start out just defining what elder abuse actually is. And Dr. Fitzwater, we'll start with you. Can you define it, please?
Yes. It's anytime someone hurts an older adult, or anytime someone steals their money or psychologically abuses them, calls them names, anytime they sexually abuse them, anytime something is done to an older adult that is harmful and not with their permission, pretty much.
Carol, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think when we talk about elder abuse, one of the things we know about elder abuse is it's abuse that takes place at the hands of a trusted caregiver.
Exactly.
And it can be physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, but it also, in almost every instance, has an element of financial abuse.
Mm-hmm. Really? So financial is a big part of it then, even more so than...
It starts there or it ends there, but it almost always is an element.
Charles?
Yeah, also I would just add to that that so often elder abuse can be a single act or it can be something that happens over a period of time. A lot of times we see older people that as a result of lifetime violence in their homes, that they are more prone to it, and they are oftentimes unaware that it's really escalating to what could be considered unlawful instead of just awful.
So... I guess you want to prevent both the awful and the unlawful.
Yes.
By all means, definitely.
But certainly some are more severe than others. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about where you go to deal with this. And I think I'd like to start with people who maybe are not elder yet, but want to make sure that they will be safe in their elder years. What do you advise people who are starting to plan for those elder years and care and who they might rely on if they need help?
To me, the answer would be to starting to think about what a healthy relationship looks like. Mm-hmm. So often, I think we find ourselves in situations where we have gone through a pattern of our life, and all of a sudden, something happens, there's a change, and we might start to blame ourselves. We might think that because I did that, it's okay that now somebody's being inappropriate to me or mistreating me kind of a thing. And we blow it off as maybe I was the cause of it. So I think to me, starting with a healthy relationship, what does a healthy relationship look like? Who are the people in your lives? What kinds of ways can they be supportive and encouraging to you? And then if something doesn't kind of, pass the test of this doesn't feel right, then that may be a good indication of something isn't right. Mm-hmm. So often we look at it, it's not just per se the unlawful acts, things where you can criminally go down something and say that there was a violence that occurred, there was a battering or a bruising, but so often it can be psychological mistreatment. It can be calling somebody worthless, unworthy, I'm going to kick you out on the street. Mm-hmm. Any kinds of threats, those kinds of things, oftentimes are things that are representative of abuse. As Carol said also, financial is a significant portion of it. Mm-hmm. People so often share hardship stories. And they want to just sit there and basically share a hardship story. And then mom or dad are going to hopefully jump in and share some money. And then maybe that doesn't go as well as we wanted it to. We want more. Then we start to be more abusive in other ways. So if you think about just a healthy relationship, if it doesn't feel right, mm-hmm. if it doesn't look right to somebody on the outside, maybe there's something that isn't right.
I think as well as you get older, it's important to make sure that you're defining your wishes. Who are those people that if you need a power of attorney for legal issues, for medical issues, that you have those things really spelled out, that you've met with your attorney, that you have an understanding of what's going to need to happen if someone needs to take care of you. I think the more that you can plan, the more you're likely to protect yourself.
But also don't even though because they might be an advisor to you, don't assume that they might not also
Absolutely.
Be somebody who's being an abuser.
Absolutely.
How do you protect your money? How do you protect your financial situation?
you do it up front. You get yourself educated. You get yourself, as Carol mentioned, you get the appropriate situation put in place for yourself financially. You don't just depend on somebody because they are close to you, quote unquote. You have to have it come from a position of trust, but also a position of being savvy and not trusting every single thing. Some of our research involved asking older people about elder abuse. Many of them would never even consider that it would come from a family member or a trusted relationship. So you have to be really educating yourself, looking at signs and symptoms of people are asking you for money every time you turn around. What is the reason for that? Why are they asking you for this money, knowing perhaps that you are living on your retirement income? And that money you can't replace. So you have to really be savvy about it.
Is it important to maybe have a couple of different people then that you have helping you out that sort of can I don't know, bounce off one another? Or?
We believe checks and balances are always a good thing.
Critical.
Anytime you can have multiple people that are involved, anytime there's a single person that's kind of that focal person, it can be problematic because they can be doing something, transferring money different ways. They can be isolating an older person so they cannot get to somebody who might also then recognize it. So any kinds of checks and balances are helpful.
We see this often with shelter. When we have someone come into shelter who's a victim, there is often, it's possibly a child that's the abuser or a grandchild that's the abuser. There's often another child that doesn't have any idea what's going on.
So,
that balance is really important.
Absolutely, because there's no definition, no consistent definition of this abuse. There is none. You can't research it. You can, but you're not researching one thing. It's very complex. There's no consistency in the literature.
It's also so hard to see because, you know, you might have, as Carol said, you know, one daughter or one son is there, and they might in public be making it all look like everything's wonderful. Oh, Mom, what can I do? Mm-hmm. How can I help you? But then behind door number one, they are becoming abusive to Mom. Mm-hmm. So just because we might see something in public does not mean that that's not what's happening behind closed doors in private.
So at what age should you start doing this kind of planning? Because I think people don't ever like to talk about this. We always want to assume we'll be able to take care of ourselves. When should you start planning?
Let me take a little bit different approach to that question, because I think the bigger picture issue is we shouldn't have to be planning not to be abused as older adults.
Exactly.
We should be, right now, today, educating ourselves and our communities so that elder abuse becomes as well documented and noted and investigated as child abuse. You know, today, every time you go to the pediatrician, the doctor's checking to make sure that this child is in a healthy home and that things are going well with the child. Teachers are looking. Other professionals are checking. But with elder abuse, it's a secret problem. It's a hidden problem. The system of support doesn't exist. So if we all educate ourselves and our communities and the professionals to the point where elder abuse doesn't exist for 3.5 to 5 million older adults in this country every year, then we won't have to worry so much about what's going to happen to us. People are going to be paying attention. You know, we see it often. The bank will call and say, someone's signature is different on a check or something else is going on. Those are the kinds of things that everybody should be tuned into so that elder abuse is not something we have to be prepared for.
What's interesting also is for child abuse, people get outraged at that because we sit there and we think, who would harm a child? So can the community, family and friends naturally get involved? However, when it becomes domestic violence, then we sit there and say, well, why doesn't she leave? Mm-hmm. Implying that it's all on her. If she wanted to, she could. And then when you get to elder abuse, a lot of times it comes down to it's a family matter. And the answer is it may be a family matter because the family could be the ones that are actually the abusers. Mm-hmm. So to kind of echo what's said there is the more we can do for education to help people become aware of the signs and the symptoms and things like that, then the more we can start to not only consider it for how we might expect there to be healthy relationships in our lives, but also where we might see things that seem to be unusual behavior and therefore might be an indication that somebody is being mistreated.
With the checks and balances you talk about for child abuse, and you mentioned doctors, you know, are always asking and checking when the child comes in for checkups, is that similar work being done with doctors now? Are they talking with elderly folks who come in to say, hey, how are things going at home? Do they get time alone with that person, or is that person that's potentially abuser always with them?
Sometimes they are with them. And one of the things we recommend to professionals in the health field is to take that person aside and do it privately. I need to talk to your mom in the other room for a few minutes. I need to take your mom in here. We need to discuss something else, or your dad. It is true that the medical community is really stepping up a lot more to really try to put together some assessment instruments that are very documented now, and all of that can go on your website. But the thing to think about is that we need to be as outraged and angry about elder abuse as we are about child abuse.
And Carol, don't you guys have some kind of a situation at the Shalom Center where basically if somebody comes in for shelter that the family cannot have contact with
them
for a while?
Yes, we do. When someone comes into shelter, they're prohibited contact with the abuser. They don't have a phone. We keep them really protected for 2 weeks. If there are other family members that aren't involved, sometimes they can visit, but we try to make sure that they're in a place where they can heal because they're coming in as a victim. And
well, let's
that's
talk
really
about
important.
That. How do you find these people? How do they find you? How does that all work out?
We most of the referrals that come for shelter are people who come through Adult Protective Services. We serve a 5-county region, you know, Hamilton, Claremont, Butler, Warren, Montgomery counties. And APS is really the first line of calling us and saying, we've got a situation, we think this is an abuse. In some of the cases we've provided shelter for, APS has been accompanied by the police to forcibly remove someone from a home situation. We've had people come from emergency rooms. We've had people come from doctor's offices. We had a beautician identify someone who had been beaten by her sibling, by her brother. She was wincing every time that she was moving in the beauty shop. It was the only place she was allowed out Friday afternoon to get her hair done. The beautician knew enough to call APS. APS made the referral for shelter. We had one woman who came. She was having a mammogram. She spoke very limited English, and she kept saying, hurt, hurt. And the staff knew enough to call someone in and try to understand what was going on. Her grandson had moved back into the home and was beating her. So cases come from lots of different places.
What's interesting in what you just said there is think about the people that she just said who were the abusers. In one case, it was a sibling. Mm-hmm. So we don't think about that as maybe often. She also mentioned a grandchild. So it's not per se always an adult child. It could be anybody who's abusing somebody. But back to your initial question, though, I think it is so vitally important that whenever you do any kind of an assessment, you isolate that person. You get them alone to be able to mm-hmm. ask them questions. Because if somebody's standing next to me who's the abuser and you say, is everything okay? Of course I'm going to say yes. But now if all of a sudden I can separate you from the person who could be the abuser and now ask you questions, even though you might not say it, maybe times body language could indicate mm-hmm. it. Maybe there's something that all of a sudden suggests something's not right here.
And you let the experts at the Adult Protective Services, APS, as Carol just mentioned, that is what they do. That is why they are there, is to help older people in any kind of situation that even could be suspected. And it's like with Homeland Security, if you see something, say something. Don't just keep it to yourself.
Well, that's we hear about Adult Protective Services, but I bet there are a lot of people who have never until this moment heard of mm-hmm. this group. If you do suspect something, if you run across an older person, maybe at church or at the grocery store or wherever, and you think something is going on, how do you even begin to contact Adult Protective Services?
It's very easy to call APS. You can find their number anywhere. But if you don't know what to do, you can always call us at the Shalom Center or email us, and we will be happy to give you the number for their countywide, so for your particular county, and make sure that you're connected with those services. APS has the skills and the tools and the authority to go in and ask the questions, and they're very good about how they investigate a set of circumstances. You know, through the Shalom Center, we've made available a number of different checklists that people can use. So we have checklists for physicians. We have checklists for attorneys. We have checklists mm-hmm. for bankers so that they can look at this and say, you know, I need to talk to and it's very key to talk to the older adult alone. I need to ask some of these questions. I need to look at this. And beyond abuse, I think it's important that we mention that neglect is a form of abuse as well. Denying someone their medications, not following up on their medical care, not properly giving them food and nutrition if they're dependent for that. That's another form of abuse that also needs to be mm-hmm. recognized. And as Evelyn said so well, if you see something, say something.
We're talking about elder abuse this afternoon. And if you have a question or a comment, we'd like to hear from you. Our number is 513-419-7100. You also can email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. We'll continue our discussion about elder abuse
in just a moment here on 91.7. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking this afternoon about elder abuse, and joining me are CEO and President of Cedar Village and the Shalom Center for Elder Abuse Prevention at Cedar Village, Carol Silver Elliott. From the UC College of Nursing, we have Dr. Evelyn Fitzwater and the President of CareMinistry.com, Charles Pukta. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask a question, give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We were talking a little bit about the various types of abuse and what can be done to make people more aware of it. And Carol, you brought up the idea of neglect. And I'm not sure that people really completely understand what all that means. Can you explain that a little bit further in terms of if you are responsible for an older person and responsible for their care, what are you responsible to do?
When we talk about a caregiver relationship for an older adult, it's obviously dependent on what that person's circumstances are, what their needs are. But in the case of someone who's dependent, for example, on a caregiver to provide their medications, to set up their medications, to buy their medications, to take them to the physician for a follow-up visit, if those things aren't being done, they're deliberately being denied the patient, or perhaps the individual doesn't have the capacity to really be a caregiver, that's neglect. If someone is dependent for assistance with using the restroom and they're left in a soiled undergarment for a period of time, that's neglect. If someone is not properly fed or given nutrition, we had a case of that come into the Shalom Center of a woman who was dehydrated, malnourished, down under 80 pounds, that's neglect. These are all cases where it's another form of abuse when someone is not being provided what they need to be well maintained and healthy.
What do you do if it's a situation where the person sort of was forced into caregiving? Maybe it really is not. Maybe it is a younger grandchild and not in a position to handle that. And maybe you know that you're not doing what you need to be doing, but you don't know what to do. Where do you go for help?
That's a tough question. People do face that all the time. The great thing is, in Cincinnati, there's a number of different resources that we have available. So I think we'd probably all suggest start with doing something. Call somebody. Ask for help. At least reach out.
But who? I mean, that's the thing. Well, where do you even start?
Start off with an organization like Cedar Village. Start off with the College of Nursing. Start off by calling your Council on Aging and ask for help and see where that leads you to. And sometimes just say what the situation is. My loved one needs care. I cannot tend to their care because of my work schedule, my this, that, or the other. What do I do? We do have resources, but a lot of times we just got to start to connect the dots and figure out who can be the best person to support them or guide them somewhere else.
There are other places that can also be helpful, and I think you're absolutely right. Just start the conversation somewhere. But some of the social service agencies, Jewish Family Service, Catholic Family Service, any of those, clergy often know exactly how to make a referral to other services that can be really useful. Connect with someone that can give you those resources, because there are resources out there. There are living options. If a grandchild is in a position of caring for an older adult they can't manage, there are living options out there. There are caregiving options out there. People are not alone. But
don't you need money for a lot of those things?
I mean, there's support for many of those things. There are many, for example, Medicaid funds some assisted living waivers. If someone needs help and they qualify for Medicaid with limited resources, there are places they can live. It is not the situation of, oh my goodness, I'm stuck caring for this older adult and I can't manage it. There are resources.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. We go now to Tiffany, who's calling from Mount Auburn. Hi, Tiffany.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, I was actually going to make a comment because I find this conversation to be very interesting. I have a grandmother who is turning actually 97 very soon. We're very excited to celebrate that. But I want to say about a year or two ago, we were actually in a parking lot, and I got into a big fight with my grandmother. And I am of a darker skin complexion, and my grandmother is white. And we had a gentleman that actually approached us and specifically asked my grandmother if she was okay. And I knew I wasn't abusing my grandmother. She knew that she was not being abused. But, I immediately thought of that. I'm like, I could go to jail right now, or we could have cops right here, you know, trying to assess the situation simply because we're, you know, in the midst of a conflict. And sometimes I feel like with older people, they can be very emotional, at least my grandmother can be. And I feel like the interactions can be misconstrued. And I feel like that's kind of like the tough thing. I wish there was kind of a more well-rounded conversation about that, that it is a lot more difficult navigating your way through kind of those emotional interactions with adults. And sometimes it does look worse than maybe it is.
What do you say to someone who says, you know what, we just argue. We're a family who's always on high emotion. And, you know, I know in my family growing up, everybody yelled, and that's just showed you loved each other. But what do you do in that situation? How do you define or decide whether, gosh, I should say something about this, or this is just family interaction?
First thing I would say is I applaud the gentleman who actually intervened and took the step, because, again, it's that same thing. Start somewhere. Better to be wrong and have everybody at least clarify what's happened than to have somebody be in an abusive situation where we all kind of, you know, turn the blind eye. But I think what happens is, as we do assessments, whether it's police that would come out potentially or whether it's Adult Protective Services, they are so well trained at starting to ask some questions and assess a situation and find out if this is normal behavior or if this is abnormal behavior. If we finally find out that people always raise their voices, this is just normal, and we can separate the two people and ask questions and say, yes, it was just a conflict, then we go on our merry way. But if somebody is clearly disturbed by what happened, is feeling unsafe by what happened, then yes, we would hope that the law enforcement or anybody else would intervene and separate the people and try to protect the older person.
I also think that, you know, family dynamics are family dynamics, and not all of them are simple and uncomplicated. But as someone, and I think that's part of this question, as someone gets older, their needs may change, their cognitive abilities may change. You may be dealing with some issues of health decline or some dementia. I think it's important, and we see this all the time, certainly at Cedar Village, families can get very frustrated with an older adult whose abilities are changing, and it's difficult to communicate with them. And they're not the person that they were when they were 50. They're 90-something years old. They're not that same person in most cases. Sometimes you also need to get your own support and education for that as well. The Alzheimer's Association, there are other community groups, depending on what the circumstances are, can really help to provide tools so that you can work more effectively with an older adult. In at Cedar Village, when we get frustrated working with someone because we're having difficulty, we give ourselves a timeout, or you give another staff member a timeout to say, wait a minute, let's take a breath and approach this differently, because it is complicated to deal with someone particularly that has cognitive impairments, and you have to be able to have skills and tools so that you can work effectively with them.
Tiffany, does that answer your question? Or do you still worry that... Go ahead.
Sorry. No, we actually talked about it later, and my grandmother later apologized to me because she did not realize the negative effects of the interaction. But I did tell her, I'm like, if you're yelling at me and we're getting into an argument, people can misconstrue it. And she did later understand the problem or the error of the situation. But in the moment, it is difficult, because sometimes she is older. She's 96. She's accustomed to having her freedoms, doing the things that she wants, but has limited abilities. And sometimes that we just run into problems. And she's always been a very intense, highly emotional woman, and it's just gotten worse with age. I'm used to it, but others around us observing it could see it as something else. And it is sometimes difficult to navigate that as she progresses in age.
Tiffany, thanks so much for calling and bringing that up. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
Take care. Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, Simon's calling from Montgomery. Hi, Simon.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for taking my call. My question is directed to the panel generally kind of dovetailing on the cognitive impairment issue with people living longer and having a rise in diminished mental capacity. If they have anything in place to alert them of potential fraud with use of financial power of attorneys, and whether they reach out to Adult Protective Services or what they do in those types of situations.
Charles?
Fraud is an interesting one. We like to think that people having, you know, documents in place and having relationships established as a financial power of attorney, having banking stuff like that is all in place, it would be good. But again, it kind of goes back to checks and balances. We always encourage people to have multiple checks and balances. It's not a single point. As you know, one of the first signs that we see is that people have a hard time balancing their checkbook. And many times we view that as just a simply an age-related factor, and yes, it certainly is, but also that is also an indication that if you cannot manage your finances, that you're much more vulnerable to having your finances misappropriated. So if there's a time that you suspect something, talk to your bank. See if there's something that the bank might be able to do to put a red flag on your account, to make sure that it's known who does have relationships with you, things like that.
Some of the banks are also very tuned in to asking the questions. You know, they're looking, they're training their tellers and other staff to look at patterns. So if, you know, Mrs. Smith has always come in and taken out $50 at a time and all of a sudden she's taking out $500, or if Mrs. Smith, because, you know, our older adults like to talk to people, so she's always come in and she's talked to the teller and they, you know, they chat and all of a sudden someone else is coming in or using an ATM, there's a difference in pattern that may merit a little further investigation or maybe a call.
Right. And really, when you think about having power of attorney, one of the things we recommend all the time is have some checks and balances there. Do some auditing. Have someone audit that and to see that everything is on the correct path.
With a situation in the news just last week, I believe, where there was a lady whose next-door neighbor was helping her because she had multiple sclerosis. And this caregiver ended up taking about $125,000 from her over a period of time. On the outside, it appeared as though the lady was being kind and generous and helpful, but behind the closed doors, she was actually taking her money and robbing her blind of her life savings. So again, that's why the checks and balances is so important, not just to look at it at face value, but to have the banking community start looking at the unusual patterns, to have other people start looking at things.
Simon, does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call. Our number is 513-419-7100. You also can send us your questions by email, talk@wvxu.org. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Mary emailed, and she suggests more training is needed for law enforcement to recognize elder abuse. And would it be better for a victim to call it assault or financial exploitation? What should somebody do if they want to report that they are being abused?
We actually just did, with the Center for Aging and Dignity at UC College of Nursing, we recently just did training of law enforcement all over Warren County. And I was delighted to see the receptivity of the law enforcement community wanting to know more about it in ways that they can get involved in and participate. We would agree, I think all of us would agree here, that more and more training is vitally important because, again, we need to know the signs and the symptoms. We need to know what we can do to respond to those types of things. So we are by all means for training.
One of the things that I think comes up is just the whole idea of being a caregiver and the stress that's involved with that, because it can be extremely difficult. I went through it with my own parents, and I know what that's like, and you're trying to do the best you can, yet sometimes you just feel overwhelmed. Is there a place where you feel if you are getting to a point where you may start abusing or unintentionally or doing things just because you're frustrated and you don't know where to turn, where can the caregivers go for help?
A lot of times our social service agencies are well equipped to handle those kinds of calls. You know, we work a lot with Jewish Family Service, but I know they're at Catholic Family Service and some of the other folks. If you call them, they have social workers on staff that can help you talk it through, connect you with resources, you know, and in today's world, there are support groups even online that you can get in a chat room and talk to other people who are, you know, you can get in a group about just about anything. But if you're feeling burnout and you need caregiver support, you can do that. There are many places like Cedar Village that offer respite care. If you are a caregiver and someone's needs are really difficult for you to manage and you need a weekend off, or you need to go to a family wedding and you need a week away, there are places where you can place your loved one that they will be safe and well cared for. You get the break you need, they get the care that they need.
And what is the cost for something like that?
It really depends on where, and it depends on the individual, but You know, I think there are lots of choices to meet people's various needs, and there's support for that depending on where they go and what the circumstances are.
So if you don't have a lot of money, that doesn't mean you shouldn't go looking. There may be help for you as
Absolutely.
Well. Because I think some people get into a situation if they are not in a financial, a very financially stable place, that they feel they can't spend extra money or you know, a lot of money to have someone taken care of.
Respite is such an important concept, but I think with anything we're talking about here, if you suspect something, if you have a question, do something, call somebody, ask the questions, and find out what kind of services there are available. We are really blessed in Cincinnati to have some wonderful organizations and some great resources. And again, if you can just make that initial call, find somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, then there's probably a way to get some help.
Even if you call the Adult Protective Services and you can report anonymously, it is an anonymous phone call, but say it isn't abusive, they still have the expertise to lead you to services.
And a lot of times, actually, Adult Protective Services, the intervention does not become an intervention related to abuse. That may not be founded. Instead, it becomes an intervention to say, we have a situation where a person has other needs. They have needs for transportation. They have needs for meals. And then those become referrals to other agencies to meet those needs.
They work together. They have a wonderful network, especially as Charles says, we have a great deal of networking in Cincinnati with services that are available.
One of the things that I found in dealing with my own parents and with older relatives, and not in this area, but that had an issue and they weren't quite sick enough to get the help that they needed, yet they needed help. Where do you go then when you're not, you know, you don't need nursing care yet? You sort of can take care of yourself. You know, in one case, I have an uncle with the beginning stages of dementia. My aunt is just fine, but she's in her 80s and they need to get out of their house and they have no kids. And where do you go? Where do you get that help when it's not quite to that point yet?
There are many resources available if you look for them. Sometimes it's as simple as getting a home health aide in a couple of hours a day so that the caregiver can get the break that they need. Sometimes it's having someone come in and assess the home to make sure the home is safe. That you can do we do wellness assessments of older adults. So we do a deep dive looking at their medical conditions, their physical condition, their balance, their psychological issues, so that you can make a plan for where this person is. I think oftentimes denial is a huge piece of this puzzle, and the caregiver and often the family members are seeing something that is better than what is actually taking place. They're missing those needs of the older person. So it's important to get a good medical workup, to have a good physician that can really tell you what, help you figure out what's going on. And in almost every instance, if you look for resources, you don't have to look that hard. They're there.
A great thing in Cincinnati is we have these things called senior tax levies. And we have been blessed that these levies have passed with flying colors every time they've come up for renewal. And as a result, there are additional resources that may not be available in other cities where, again, the Council on Aging might be able to at least have a care manager or a case manager go out and at least start the conversation and start the referrals.
These are comprehensive. They need to be done in a comprehensive manner. It takes a team. We've heard this saying, it takes a village, and it truly does. And we do have a great deal of empathy for caregivers. We get it. We understand. And I think that's why the levies have been so successful, too, to help that missing link.
People want to do the right thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. One of the places, and Carol mentioned the Alzheimer's Association here in Cincinnati, and if your loved one is beginning the Alzheimer journey or the dementia journey, it is critical for those folks to get in touch with the Cincinnati Alzheimer's Association and begin the journey at that point. Don't wait until they're so frustrated and so scared and everybody is at wit's end before they really make the move towards help.
Great point.
We're talking this afternoon about elder abuse and what to do to stop it. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. I want to point out we have links and information about all that we've been talking about on our website. Go to wvxu.org to the Cincinnati Edition page. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking today about elder abuse. And joining me, CEO and president of Cedar Village and the Shalom Center for Elder Abuse Prevention at Cedar Village, Carol Silver Elliott. From the UC College of Nursing, we have Dr. Evelyn Fitzwater and president of CareMinistry.com, Charles Pukta. You can join the conversation by calling us at 513-419-7100, email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We've been talking a lot about elder abuse, and we've talked about the shelter that Carol's associated with, but we haven't really explained what it is or how it works, so we're going to do that now. Tell us a little bit about why it's so unique to have this type of an elder shelter in the Cincinnati area.
I would be glad to. There are now 9 elder abuse shelters in the country. And again, we talked about how many millions of older adults are victims of abuse every year. It's a very small number of shelters. We started our shelter 2 years ago. We are the only shelter in Ohio and still the only shelter in the Midwest. And the Shalom Center is what we call a virtual shelter. That means that we can provide shelter for someone anywhere within our complex. We have 162 nursing home beds and 105 assisted living apartments. Any one of those spaces, when available, can be a shelter for someone who is being abused, because after all, the core of shelter is a bed. When someone comes to us, they come for what we call a crisis stabilization stay of 90 to 120 days. We do that at no charge. We provide them with a full range of services, medical service, nursing service, pastoral care, dietary, any kinds of physical, occupational, speech therapies they may need, as well as additional social services, and if they need it, pro bono legal services. But we begin the process when they're admitted with helping them to figure out what is going to be the safest discharge to the least restrictive alternative. And I'm happy to say that in all of the cases that we've admitted, we've had very successful results, making sure that they can heal, that they can be separated from the abuser, and that they can find an option that's going to work for them to live with dignity for the long term.
If you are dealing with someone who has dementia, Alzheimer's, those types of mental or cognitive, I should say, issues, what do you need to know to help them make those decisions when they may not be able to think clearly to make those decisions on their own?
And we have worked with some individuals who have cognitive impairments. It's a question, of course, of degrees. But we've had cases that were referred to us from APS, from the community of people with dementia who were clearly being abused. Again, it's a question of looking at who else there is in the family, who else is not aware of the abuse or is willing to have that older adult live closer to them. Perhaps they need to be placed in some sort of a residential facility somewhere. We've moved people out of, we've helped people move out of state to be nearer a child who is not involved with the abuse. It's really trying to find the right solution for that individual, because it's not one size fits all.
Thoughts about the shelter? Have you all referred folks there ever? Or?
We have not per se at the College of Nursing, but it's a resource that's available, as Carol said, to a 5-county area. And again, it is very unique. I think about all the domestic shelters that are out there for battered women. And so it's been a long time coming, and it's amazing that so few organizations have really recognized the need as the Cedar Village has. So we are just thrilled that it's here in our community.
We have definitely talked it up, and we have definitely told people about the shelter.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question, Richard's calling from Clifton. Hi, Richard. What's your question?
Hi, this is Richard. I'm a caregiver for my wife who has dementia. And I was listening to the statement about how nicely networked Cincinnati is to help caregivers and so forth. But I've had an opposite experience, and I wonder, is that typical, or just an anomaly?
Can you tell us what kind of bad experiences you've had? What's happened?
Well, they're not bad experiences as much as I contact an agency for some home care, and I don't get a call back. And this is extremely frustrating when you're trying to manage your life and have set up sort of a program of caregivers coming to the home.
Do you have advice?
Well, if you mentioned your wife has dementia, did I correct
you?
Yeah. Then I would suggest, as Dr. Fitzwater said, starting off with the Alzheimer's Association is a great place to start. And again, maybe even the Council on Aging, and asking what services might be available. Carol mentioned the idea earlier of having potentially a caregiver coming in your house for a couple hours here and there. So starting off with those.
I already do have, but I've sort of had to put it together for myself. And when I call agencies, sometimes they don't seem interested or they don't seem supportive. And to me, that's extremely frustrating on top of all the frustrations involved with caregiving.
I can imagine. So I don't think our experience with those organizations, like the Alzheimer's Association and Council on Aging, have at all been like that. In fact, I know that those organizations are ones that have expectations and requirements within what they do to return phone calls within periods of time, unlike maybe a private organization. An independent caregiving organization might not pursue it the same way. So I guess we
say try again.
Yes. There are a number of home care organizations out there. I think if you're not getting the responsiveness you need from the one you're calling, call somebody else. There are quite a few of them out there. But if they're not responding to you appropriately, then, you know, even the quality of their service gets called into question. So I would shop around if I were you and see who else is out there.
Interesting point you just made also, Marianne, about try again. Wholeheartedly believe that. If you call someplace and the answer that you get doesn't seem right, try calling back another day. You might get a different person and get a completely different answer. Or maybe based on what you've learned the first time you've called, maybe now you're going to frame your question differently. And maybe you're going to end up going to a whole different person and getting a completely different answer.
Okay.
Try, and try again.
Thanks much.
Thank you so much, Richard. We appreciate the call. Our number, if you have a question or a comment, 513-419-7100. One of the issues that we've talked about, of course, is neglect and how if a person is being neglected, that's a sign of abuse. But we haven't talked about self-neglect, and that seems to be also a big problem. Who wants to tell us how to define that? What is self-neglect?
Self-neglect is really an older adult. Doesn't have to be an older adult, an individual who's not caring for themselves appropriately. And unfortunately, it's an extremely difficult problem to handle. You know, with someone who's being neglected by a caregiver, you know, you can intervene, you can provide care, you can support them with services. But someone who is not caring for themselves, either because they have cognitive impairment or some psychological issues, that's a tough one. We have a very difficult time intervening and making change with those folks. It really is a significant issue with older adults and one that does not have a good solution.
Doesn't have a one-size-fits-all solution either, and it's very challenging. Some of the ways that I've been able to accomplish getting something done is to have the family have the person that the older person trusts the most talk to them. And a lot of times it's been clergy, people in faith-based organizations that I've had the best luck with. So when you have a situation like that, and then if you have a dementia or cognitive impairment involved, then my suggestion would also couple up with the Alzheimer's Association in Cincinnati, and maybe they can also help you.
And one of the things that's been said before is it takes a village. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times if you see somebody who all of a sudden their behavior seems to be changing, if they start to look a little disheveled, if they're not put together the same way, maybe those are indications for friends and neighbors to start to rally. Maybe somebody can provide a meal if you don't think somebody's getting proper nourishment. Maybe if you make a casserole one night, you make an extra one and you drop it off at their house. There's a lot of times little simple acts of kindness that we can do to be supportive to people. You know, I've heard of people that sometimes they may not be able to drive and get to the grocery store. Well, if you're the next door neighbor and you're already going, why not see, hey, can I pick up a couple of things for you? So again, it doesn't have to necessarily be a formal service that is coming to your aid. A lot of times, just as community, how can we be more conscientious about what's going on around us and be more responsive to our friends and neighbors?
Right, and a lot of people who do have the self-neglect syndrome are depressed. They really are. And that takes, again, a village of people to help that. And if you say to them, what can I do to help? You're not going to get anywhere. Just sometimes say, hey, how about if I come over and take you to the grocery? Or do you have a doctor's appointment? I can take you because I'm going down that way. Bring them a casserole. Don't ask them, because they're probably at the level of they don't care enough about themselves with their depression, possibly, that they're able to move forward on your suggestions. They need you to just step in and help.
All of these situations that involve elder abuse are all very, very complex. Mm-hmm. Nothing here is per se simple, easy, clear cut. But the point, I think, still is the more we can do to be aware, to kind of you know, start being more observant about things. And then the more we can start to make calls and start to get the process going is going to be beneficial to us.
We had an email from Kathy who said her mom is not her grandmother's caregiver, but is her advocate. And they've had some problems with care at a former facility. And they want to know what the difference between a caregiver and an advocate is in this instance.
A caregiver, generally, it can be the same person. It can be someone different. You know, the caregiver is generally the person who has some responsibility for that older adult's care. An advocate role is really more of perhaps someone else is providing that care, a facility or some sort of a service, where the advocate is really making sure that that person's needs are met or representing them. You know, we often say with older adults, when they go to the doctor, when they're in the hospital, they need an advocate because it's difficult sometimes for them to represent themselves. And, you know, many of them are from a generation where they don't like to ask authority figures a lot of questions. So it's important to have someone with them to ask those questions and to make sure that they're getting appropriate answers.
And additionally, I think it's also important to mention, based on that question, that Adult Protective Services is an organization that responds to people that are living independently in the community, whether it's in their own home, whether it's with loved ones. Whereas if it's in a nursing home, there's a different system, which is the ombudsman system. And the ombudsmans are the ones that basically work through and with nursing homes if there are complaints or if there are potentially abusive situations going on there.
What should you look for if you do have a loved one in a nursing home and you maybe have some concerns? What should you look for when you check out a nursing home?
Well, you know, we always say to people, use all your senses when you come in. Come in and tour and look at how the residents that live there look, because that's a big indicator. How does the building smell? What eat the food? Watch the activities. Watch the interactions with the staff. See how you feel. You really need to be tuned in. If you feel good about an organization that you're thinking about placing your loved one in, chances are you're just fine. And in a good organization, if there is any kind of an incident with a caregiver who's not behaving appropriately, it's identified very quickly and addressed very quickly.
We have an email from Robert who wants to know how to tell a private aide he no longer needs her services without a fear of retribution because this person has shown a temper.
If this is a private aide that is finishing a shift, per se, I certainly would make sure that at the end of the shift, you are gracious and thank them and tell them whatever, that you're no longer going to need their services. I certainly wouldn't do that when they're still providing care for someone. But it's like any other service relationship. If you're closing that door, you try to do it as nicely as you can. Perhaps you've replaced them with a different kind of service. And of course, if you're fearful, you call the police and make sure that you have the backup that you need.
We did talk in the beginning of the program, though, also about setting expectations and kind of planning ahead. And I guess as a former family caregiver, one of the things that I would highly suggest is, as you think about bringing someone into your home to assist your loved ones, think about what your expectations are. And that's maybe an area where you can sit there and spell things out. We actually had a situation with a caregiver where after a few months, we started to document and put together kind of a sheet of what our expectations were. And part of it was because we recognized behaviors that might not have been as appropriate as we thought they should be. And then we started to basically put that person on notice. We expect the following things. And again, it's kind of hard sometimes to set that list in place too early because you may not know. But clearly the idea of speaking in a demeaning or threatening way to a loved one, handling someone in less than a courteous and dignified manner where there's any form of aggression, clearly unacceptable. So sometimes it's easier, I believe, as people to sit there and say, if we spell out the expectations, then we have the confidence to say, this is not meeting our expectation. We need to make some changes.
Thank you all for being here. I want to remind everyone that we have a list of information and details on our website, wvxu.org, take you to links of information you may need that you heard about today. Go to the Cincinnati Edition page. Again, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking today about elder abuse, and my guest today were CEO and President of Cedar Village and the Shalom Center for Elder Abuse Prevention at Cedar Village, Carol Silver Elliott, from the UC College of Nursing, Dr. Ellen Fitzwater, and President of Care Ministry.com, Charles Pukta. Today's technical director was Bruce Ellis. Cincinnati Edition is produced by Pete Reitmeier. Our engineering staff is Don Danko, Bill Dean, and Mike Makinich. We also had help today from Kevin Reynolds. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.